across the UK, online and on DAB. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
It's more like Boris Karloff.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's all happening as we enter day two of the election campaign. That's right, we are only 2 days into a five-week campaign. And the only dilemma is where to begin. Former Minister and Gordon Brown aide Ian Austin has quit the Labour Party and is urging everyone to vote for the Tory Party. You would have heard him on Julie Hartley Brewer's show and we'll be listening to some of what he had to say as well. Labour's Deputy Leader Tom Watson surprisingly quit his job last night and declared that he wouldn't be running in the election next month. Is there a bigger story behind him leaving the party that he's been a member of practically since he was a boy, or is it simply that he ran out of road with the Corbynistas? Boris Johnson launched his party's campaign last night and was immediately mired in a resignation scandal from his own cabinet, and the Remain parties have launched a new pact to safeguard the anti-Brexit vote. Today, there's more action from Scotland, where the Prime Minister is dropping in, and Jeremy Corbyn will be unveiling a Labour bus in Liverpool. I wonder what it's going to say on the side. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll be asking why the Tories are so frightened of the report on Russian interference, why e-cigarettes are definitely bad for you, despite what Public Health England say. And we'll be asking you for your favourite Brexit-related words after the Collins Dictionary has added Ramonas and milkshaking into their latest edition. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So imagine the scene, right? Boris Johnson decides to go and see the Queen. Everybody knows why he's going to see the Queen. He puts out a video saying why he's going to see the Queen. He then asks the Queen to dissolve Parliament, which everybody knew was pretty much already dissolved anyway. And he then goes back to Downing Street to announce that he is going to have an election, which everybody knew. He then says these are going to be the main reasons why you should be voting for me, which are all the same reasons he said that we should have in the Queen's speech. So not much new there. And as if by magic, that was immediately overshadowed a few moments before he made that announcement. By the resignation of a member of the cabinet over a very complicated story to do with a rape trial in Wales. Then Tom Watson decides to quit as deputy leader of the Labour Party and blows everybody else out of the water. So if you were a Tory press person, I suppose this morning you'd be going, well, I suppose it could have been worse, but I'm not quite sure how. John Rentall is here, political commentator, of course, at The Independent. John, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, I know this is only day two, but I have to say it feels like about day 22 already, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, the election did come upon us rather suddenly.
Yeah.
Because I was still confidently telling you, I think, that I didn't think there would be an election before Christmas. And then suddenly Jo Swinson turned tail, betrayed the Labour Party and said, all right, let's have one. And ever since then, it's felt like full-fat election campaigning.
Yeah, it really has.
It does feel like it's been going on for a while.
But it also feels, because of the issues involved, and particularly Brexit as the issue, that all of the kind of main planks of anybody's manifesto we've all been talking about for weeks on end anyway.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, when Boris Johnson did his speech last night, which I watched before I knew about Tom Watson's resignation, it was just the same old Boris Johnson lines. I mean, some of them are quite amusing about, bendy bus jackknifing in the yellow box junction. I had heard it all before.
Mm.
So I was tearing my hair out as to what I was going to write about it. and then, of course, Tom Watson provided the next story. I mean, it has been a story-rich environment.
It really has. I mean, I was out when I got the old alert on my phone, and it was one of those I had to read like three times because I thought, well, hang on a minute, Tom Watson's quitting. What do you mean? He's leaving the Labour Party? He's going to stand as an independent? No, he's not going to stand. He's just leaving politics altogether. Do you know if there's anything else to this story? I know that the whole Carl Beach thing kind of consumed him, and he looks a lot worse coming out of that than he went going into it. But surely, is it just the fact that he's given up the fight, as it were, against the left part of the party?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know Tom Watson very well. I'm a Blairite. He was a Brownite,
right.
And you know, so we haven't seen eye to eye for a while. But I mean, of course, one of the interesting things that's happened over the past 4 years has been the Blairites and the Brownites coming back together, and he's been quite central to that. But no, I mean, I hear from friends of his that he's just completely fed up with politics and wants out. But I should think, you can see that he thinks that whichever way this election goes, there's not really much of a role for him. I mean, either Labour loses, in which case Corbyn will probably have to go. But what would Tom Watson do? I mean, he wouldn't be a candidate probably.
But it seems odd, doesn't it? Because, mate, you would have thought that perhaps his final opportunity to be the leader of the Labour Party would be in the event of Labour not winning this election and Corbyn standing down and him having an opportunity to say, well, the reason why we didn't win is because we went too far left. And so if you stay with me and I will lead you to the next, I would have thought you might have hung around for that.
No, I think the next leader after Jeremy Corbyn is going to be someone who can bring the party together, someone who could pose as something of a left winger without being quite so Corbynized. Mm. And I just don't think that is Tom Watson. And as you say, all that stuff about the VIP paedophile ring conspiracy that he promoted,
massive misjudgment, wasn't it?
Did suggest that his judgment is not great. So I do think, in a way, it's sensible for him to move on.
Yes, I think so. I think anyone who got themselves involved in promoting that was absolutely wrong and should never have been allowed to do it. But let's talk about Ian Austin now as well, because he was on Julie Hartley Brewer's show this morning. Let's just have a listen to him and what he said to Julia.
There's a big choice at this election. There's only two people who can be Prime Minister, only two. And the British people are going to have to decide, Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn. And I think Jeremy Corbyn's completely unfit to lead the country. And as I say, it gives me no pleasure of this at all. It's been a really tough decision. But in the end, I think you've got to stand up and you've got to tell the truth and you've got to do what's right. And I think that's why I've decided the choice people have got to make, I think, is to vote for Boris Johnson.
Incredibly emotional, Ian Austin, this morning when he was speaking to Julie Hartley Brewer. Clearly has been wrestling with his conscience over this, John, but also a remarkable turn of events, right?
I salute his honesty and his clear thinking, because, if you do think Jeremy Corbyn is unfit to be Prime Minister, then there is only one conclusion to draw. And, he's brave enough to draw it in public and tell people so.
Mm.
It's interesting. Tom Harris, another former Labour MP, who I rather like and admire, he's come out this morning and said the same thing. He would rather have Boris Johnson as Prime Minister than Jeremy Corbyn.
And so the landscape for Jeremy Corbyn and Labour is not looking terrific. I mean, we know, we might as well mention it right at the top, we know that the polls can be wrong. They've been wrong in the past. Even with the Tories slipping back slightly today, they're still 11 points ahead of Labour. It's quite a large gap, isn't it?
It is. We shouldn't allow polls to dominate the coverage of the election.
No.
And journalists are not allowing that to happen because they're constantly talking up the possibility of a hung parliament, which, the polls are not pointing to at all. But, I think that's a good thing. I do think people ought to be paying attention to the full range of possible outcomes and the dangers of a Jeremy Corbyn government, as people like Ian Austin see them. And I think, one of the things about the last election was that people didn't take that possibility seriously enough and didn't ask tough questions about it. But, I do think Ian Austin's intervention is hugely significant. I mean, it makes, there was an awful lot of stuff yesterday about how the Tory campaign was going very badly. Because there was a row about, Jacob Rees-Mogg saying something incredibly insensitive and stupid. But, that wasn't a substantial event. Whereas, a Labour MP like Ian Austin saying vote Tory, I do think that is a significant event.
Yes, absolutely. Because most people in the world of politics, if they disagree with their leadership, they step down, they step aside, but they don't tell their voters to vote for the other guy, do they?
No, it's fairly unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. Are we in this kind of, leave remain territory still in terms of the issues? Because I talked to, obviously, as you do, an awful lot of people over the course of this week and the next 4 weeks, basically. And I can't get a sort of definitive answer as to will this be a Brexit election? Will there be other issues that the Labour Party tried to introduce and which will then become part of the whole? We've got a launch today of a sort of Remain alliance from Plaid Cymru to the Lib Dems, everybody really apart from the Labour Party. And I suppose I'm asking you, is it going to break down along kind of Leave Remain lines, do you think?
Yes, I do think much more than even last time, which did see a certain amount of polarisation. But I think, because Brexit is much more of an immediate question now. I mean, as Boris Johnson says, he has a deal, it's oven ready.
Yeah.
As soon as he gets back into Downing Street, if he does, that he'll be pressing the button on that and going straight ahead. So therefore, at the last election, the deal still hadn't been negotiated. Nobody knew what was going to happen. We were some way away from the Article 50 deadline. But this time, it is a pressing question. And so although I think other issues will come up, I do think this is going to be much more of a Brexit election than last time.
And how do you see the Brexit Party's role kind of panning out? Because there's already a split in the Brexit vote from the right side of the Brexiteers to the sort of central side of the Boris deal Tories, And I've been talking to lots of callers to this show, lots of people on Twitter who are some sticking with the Brexit Party saying Nigel's right, others saying, Nigel's made a complete hash of it and he should actually stop pretending that he's got any power here because he doesn't really.
I think that's right. I mean, I do think what's significant is the Brexit Party's splitting. I mean, we're seeing lots of Brexit Party candidates standing down, saying they don't want to stand in the way of Boris Johnson actually delivering Brexit.
Right.
Which, and Nigel Farage's message is, Boris Johnson's Brexit isn't really Brexit. Now, there might be.
And is he right about that, in your view?
Well, no, personally, no. Obviously, I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I think leaving the EU is Brexit. I thought Theresa May's deal was Brexit.
Yeah.
So obviously I've got no sympathy for that argument at all. I mean, that's just daft. But there might be a market for that out there. But I mean, I think it's only 5-10% of the electorate. I mean, I just don't think the Brexit Party message has got enough appeal. I mean, Nigel Farage was banking on the fact that everyone would be accusing Boris Johnson of betraying Brexit by failing to get us out on the 31st of October. But nobody seems to be taking that line. They seem to think, he failed because Parliament stopped him, and that the only way to deal with that disappointment from the Brexiteers' point of view is to return Boris Johnson with a majority.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a listen to what Rebecca Long-Bailey had to say this morning, reacting to what Ian Austin had said to Julie Hartley-Brewer.
Ian's got a fantastic record of being a Labour MP previously. He's been an independent for some time now. There's no secret of the fact that he dislikes Jeremy Corbyn immensely, and that's putting it mildly. And he's differed on some policy positions. But certainly, I mean, to suggest that people should vote Conservative is very, very saddening. And I hope that, when we win the next general election, hopefully Ian's mind will be changed and he'll come back into the tent again and he'll believe in the Labour Party again. And I don't see, that the bridges have been burned, as it were.
Reasonably straight back there from the Labour front bench, which has been, I suppose, in different measures and different forms, laughed at lately this week because of their explanations of their position on Brexit.
Well, I think their position on Brexit is perfectly clear, but it's not very honest.
Well, it's clear, but it doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, it does. I think it's perfectly sensible to say let the British people decide. We don't have a view. I mean, it's a bit odd, but I mean,
are you seriously going to tell me that a party of government doesn't want to have a view on the biggest sort of issue of the day?
No, but
that's an okay position to hold.
Well, I think it could be. Harold Wilson did something rather similar in the 1970s. But, I mean, I think what's wrong with it is that the Labour Party does actually have a view, but it's keeping it...
It's just not telling us
secret.
What it is.
Well, no, we know what it is. We know that it is a Remain party. We know 80% of its members are Remainers. We know that, almost all of its MPs are Remainers. We know the Shadow Cabinet is predominantly Remainers. This is just a political device to try and pretend to some Leave Labour voters that the party wants to represent them as well. It doesn't, and I think that's what's wrong with this policy. It's not clear.
And anecdotally, I think that the clarity of that is what might not help them in parts of the northeast of England and other places where they voted massively to leave.
Yes, so I think Labour is in deep trouble in all sorts of places, and there's a very complacent view among some Labour people that, you know, the northern working class won't ever vote Tory. I think they will. I think we've seen a poll in Workington, which is classic Labour lever territory, yes, saying that people intend to vote Conservative there, and I think that's going to happen right across, yeah, the Midlands and the North.
Yes, because I think there are many people out there who now have a view which is that if you want Brexit, you have to vote for the Tories. But Nigel, yeah, Farage, of course, will argue against that. And in fact, he was in Workington yesterday. So we'll see whether their little... Because they've had a little jump in the polls. And I know you don't like to talk about polls being too significant. But, you know, it's very hard to read, it seems to me.
Well, no, I don't think it is. I mean, I think the polls are actually pretty clear at the moment. But we mustn't rely on them too heavily. And we mustn't allow them to dominate our coverage, and we mustn't allow them to distract us from inspecting Labour Party policies properly and thoroughly, which we as journalists didn't do last time. I mean, next week I expect the Labour Party will publish its manifesto, and I suspect there's going to be a lot of complacency among Labour activists that it's going to be as popular as it was last time. But I mean, the thing is, they stuck a whole load of new spending commitments in there and confiscatory taxation policies that I think are going to go down extremely badly. And I hope journalists are going to do their job and analyse it thoroughly.
OK. Finally, we're going to be talking to Heidi Allen in the next hour, John, who's formed this Remainer election pact in 60 seats to make sure that certain candidates won't stand. There'll only be one Remain candidate standing. But, of course, they'll still be standing against Labour, who have not joined the pact. So, in effect, they're kind of going against Labour's Remain policy as well, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, I think this Remainer pact can be overdone. I mean, in most places, the Greens either didn't stand last time, or got a few percent of the vote, and Plaid Cymru in many places, didn't do very well in Wales. I mean, they've got their strongholds, but I mean, it's not a huge Remain alliance. I mean, the point is, everyone knows that if you want to. If you want to remain, then you've got to vote either Labour or for one of the other non-Tory parties. Because, I mean, Labour are essentially delivering a Remain platform because they want a referendum. And the only reason anybody wants a referendum, another referendum, is because they want to stop Brexit.
Right. And I guess for some smaller parties, it's quite a handy way of saving a few quid if you don't have to field quite so many candidates, right?
Well, indeed, yeah. No, the Greens will be saving lots of money. I mean, it's like money in the bank.
Yeah. Well, they have to put it towards the 100 billion they're going to spend on saving the world if they became the government, which was possibly
the 100 billion is coming from you and me.
Yeah, the greatest election promise of all time, I think that one was. Very good, John. Thanks very much indeed. I'm sure we will be speaking again soon. John Rentall, Chief Political Commentator at The Independent, a man who has, as he himself called himself, a Blairite, talking about Tom Watson, the former Brownite, of course, who's quit the Labour Party and quit politics altogether.
Sometimes the transition to fall and winter feels like experiencing every season on the same day. The shoes in the Allbirds Mizzle collection were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Check off your errands with the Wool Runner Mizzle, dash through cold and wet weather with the Wool Dasher Mizzle, or upgrade to next-level protection with the Wool Runner Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Coming up a little bit later on the show, Heidi Allen's going to be joining us to tell us about the Remain Alliance, which is being put together to try and stop any Brexit-supporting MPs from getting into power, because they're going to try and stand only one Remain candidate in each of 60 different constituencies. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Let's go to the phones, though. 0344 499 1000. Michael, first of all, is in Northumberland. Hi, Michael.
Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to say?
Well, as you see, I'm in the northeast of England.
Yes.
And I feel personally, and I think a lot of other people may feel the same, that when we go into the polling booth on December the 12th,
yeah.
To be honest, the Brexit debates become obfuscated again between the Brexit Party and the Conservatives.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people are in a state of confusion. And I think this choice should be simple when we go into that polling booth to either decide between the Brexit Party or the Conservative Party. It's immaterial to me if Anne Widdecombe is sitting next door to Jacob Rees-Mogg. It doesn't make any difference. They're both Brexiteers.
Yeah.
And I'd rather, the point I'm trying to make is that we should have a Brexit Parliament. We've had a Remain Parliament for the last 3 to 4 years. And to have a Brexit Parliament, that we should have a clear choice between either the Brexit Party or the Conservatives.
But you kind of do, I suppose. But you kind of do, Michael. The difficulty, I suppose, is that if there is a confusion about whether you vote for the Brexit Party or the Tory Party, you know, who's going to win that seat? It might well be that Labour then gets the seat because the Leave vote is split.
Absolutely. And in the North East, I do feel, which hasn't got a tradition of voting Conservative, that the Brexit Party should be the choice, unless you have a very strong Brexiteer Conservative, which we happen to have in Berwick-upon-Tweed with Anne-Marie Trevelyan. So it's not difficult for me because I will vote for her.
Yes. But do you mind whether it's a Brexit with a deal or without a deal?
Well, I think that as we've seen in the last 3 to 4 years, the debate going on in Parliament, it would be a joy to have a similar debate, but between Brexiteers in Parliament rather than the recalcitrant Remain types who are trying to stop Brexit altogether.
Sure.
And I think the differences should be sorted out after the election, but get into power first and then sort out the differences.
OK. Michael's great call. Thanks very much for making it. Let's talk to Jeff, who's in Hull. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
How are you?
Yeah, very well. How are you doing?
These last couple of days have been broadcasting gold for you, mate.
Well, I mean, I'm hopefully going to have another 4 weeks of it.
Well, as I echo to a certain degree what the gentleman just said that was on. As you know, I'm from Kingston-upon-Hull, and
yes.
I can guarantee you a city that has always been staunchly Labour will not be Labour. I'll be surprised if they get a seat this time. The Labour Party in Hull ignored the wishes of 71,000 people who voted to leave.
Yeah.
And the Labour Party in Hull have completely ignored that. And another thing that the Labour Party have missed as well, let's forget Corbyn because he's very easily forgettable. But we have one very, very main thing that they've forgotten. Northeast of England, along with Liverpool, is one of the largest contributors to manpower going into the armed forces. And the armed forces will not support, 100% will not support Jeremy Corbyn.
Is anybody buying in Hull, Jeff, the Labour offer, though, which is basically to give it back to the people, which they say is a defensible option on Brexit because they think the people should decide?
No, everybody in Hull that I speak to, I can't speak for everybody. I'm very heavily involved in the rugby up here, so I get into the rugby clubs quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so you get an honest opinion when you're in the rugby clubs. And generally, everybody thinks that it is one continual lie after another from Labour, and they don't actually know what they want. They're just actually saying what great gains the vote. Like yesterday, Jeremy Corbyn, for the first time, including Remembrance Day, had a poppy on.
Yeah.
Like, he's never worn a poppy before in his life.
Well, listen, Jeff, it's a great call. Thanks very much for making it. I saw Jeremy Corbyn wearing a poppy actually the other day when he was in Parliament. So I don't know whether you're going to tell me that's the first time he's done it, but certainly he's been wearing one for a while. Now, what we're also asking you to do, because of what Colin's new dictionary has done, is we want you to send us your favourite Brexit-related words because, of course, many people have used the words Ramoners, Remainers. Mariners says, how about side of a bus? That's one of my favourites. And one from Francis, or two from Francis, I like obfuscate and filibuster. These are certainly words that people are saying they've never heard before the whole Brexit debacle began. Let's speak to Sal Brinton now, President of Liberal Democrats. She's also the representative of a new Unite to Remain alliance. Sal, I suppose to get things off to a cheery start, why don't I ask you what your favourite Brexit-related word is?
Just discombobulate.
That is a great word. I do like discombobulate. That's tremendous. Very good. Best one yet, I would say. Now, tell us about the Unite to Remain. Where did you get the idea from, and when did you manage to sort of get it all agreed by three parties?
Well, I think over the last few months in Parliament, it's become clear that MPs for us to remain in the EU, it doesn't matter what party they come from, have started speaking out. And I think it's very much the beginning of a new style of progressive politics that's moving away from the old Punch and Judy red tribe and blue tribe. Unite to Remain is three of those parties coming together to say, actually, we share the common goal of remaining in the EU. And to do that, we're going to be standing back for each other in some of the seats. And today we've announced the 60 seats that we're going to be doing that in this election, where we believe that by doing that, we will actually strengthen the chances of returning an MP who will support Remain and fight to remain.
Now, without looking at the individual constituencies, we can't really do that under the election rules. What sort of realistically are you looking at as a target of those 60 seats that you can win?
So for the Liberal Democrats, of the seats where the other two parties are standing back for us, 29 are Conservative-facing seats that would deliver a hard Brexit to the country. 29 is a significant number that would reduce Boris Johnson's numbers in Parliament, and that's before we even start to get a majority.
Right.
So for us, it's very, very important because it will mean there's a stronger chance of certainly fighting for Remain, ensuring that there's a people's vote, and in our case, really fighting to make sure that we stay in the EU because we believe it's better for the country.
OK, but as for those 29, I mean, what chance do you think you have realistically of getting any of them?
Oh, they are our top target seats. It will make a difference for us.
Of course it would make a difference for everybody, but I just wonder what your chances are. But are the other seats, our 31 other seats, are they Labour-held?
Labour held, yes, they are. I'm just trying to think. There may be a couple of independents in there as well, but it's the principal thing for us is about standing against parties that promote Brexit. And both Labour and the Conservative parties are on a Brexit platform. Labour are on a softer Brexit platform than the Conservatives, but actually we know that there are many, many voters who feel frustrated by the current first-past-the-post system and would very much support having a Remain candidate. And we had that in a by-election earlier in the year where Pride and the Greens stood back for the Liberal Democrats, which was successful. And when I was going round that constituency during the by-election, what was really interesting was the number of people who said, at last, parties prepared to work together. And I think, actually, from what I see on social media, one of the big complaints about politicians is that the parties refuse to work together. Well, today's Unite to Remain initiative is the first time we've had real, true progressive politics in the United Kingdom for 100 years, actually 101 years, because it was the 1918 election last time it happened.
Right. And you say that you want to get away from tribal politics and red versus blue and all of that, but we've really just replaced tribal two-party politics with Remain and Leave politics, haven't we? Because that's become just as nasty, if not more nasty, in terms of the way that people talk to each other from opposite sides of the spectrum than it ever did before.
Well, I think the only way that we can change the tribal politics is by changing the face of what and who is sitting in Parliament. So one of the interesting things about today's launch is that the three parties and Unite to Remain were all represented by senior women politicians in the country. And I think that certainly changed the tone of the debate. And I think that it would also change some of the dialogue that's going on. You know, we've heard over recent days of many women politicians saying they're not prepared to stand again because of all the intimidation they're getting on social media. Well, it's down to us politicians to also start to change that tone. Unite to Remain wants to do that as well.
I suppose the slight sort of fly in the ointment, if you like, though, is the fact that people voted to leave the European Union in the referendum in 2016.
People voted for Brexit, but they didn't know what type of Brexit. And that's one of the reasons that Parliament is in this complete gridlock at the moment, is because the MPs...
Well, that's not actually true,
sir.
It's not technically true.
No, it isn't.
It's not.
It is absolutely true. If you look at what's happened in Parliament, there are people who would support a soft Brexit, there are people who would support a hard Brexit, and there are people who would support Remain. There is no majority to deliver that.
But that's in Parliament, that's not in the country.
And since the referendum, polls now show that there are many people whose views about Brexit have changed.
They don't,
not
actually.
Least because
no, they don't. That's
no,
not true.
They absolutely have changed.
No, they
if
haven't.
Look at the Leave polls, or Leave or Remain polls. They have changed over the last 2 years, and they show that Remain has been in the lead.
No, most of the polls which are out now, Sal, and I'd like you to show me one that says that, because most of them show that the polling positions haven't really changed, and it's about the same. If there was a second referendum to be held tomorrow, basically, it would probably be about 52-48 again.
But the other way, at least.
No, it wouldn't.
More.
I don't know where you're seeing those. I have not seen that poll.
That it's not a poll. I'm talking about the aggregation of polls over the last 2 years.
Right. So you can't point me at
one
particular poll.
I don't mean adding them up. I mean, there's been a progressive increase of people who say that they would now vote Remain. That is certainly true. The polls are there.
All right. What would you say to people who have put this question to me on social media, knowing that we were hoping to speak to Heidi Allen, but she was detained, sadly?
She's being interviewed by somebody else.
Yeah,
why.
But she had promised to interview with us, so we feel a bit miffed about that. But anyway, never mind. We won't be no-chairing anybody like Sky. The point is this, right? Surely, if you're limiting the choices of people at the polling booth, that is undemocratic, isn't it? Because what if somebody wants to vote for Plaid Cymru somewhere, but they can't because you've done a deal to pull their candidate?
So many millions of voters across the country already say that the vote doesn't count in their seat because of the first-past-the-post system. And all three parties who are involved in Unite to Remain want to see proportional representation. So we think, actually, the only way to get that is by actually changing the face of politics and bringing PR in.
Didn't we have a referendum on
that
as well?
We can't do that until we've had this election, which is about Brexit. And that's why we really want to make sure that people who want to remain can come behind one Remain candidate in 60, that's only 10% of the seats, but 60 seats across the country.
And what about the fact that the Labour Party have now got policy which tells their voters, certainly, that if they vote for the Labour Party, they will vote for a government that will seek a better deal with the European Union and then offer it as a second referendum to the public? You're effectively going to try and stop them from being able to do that, right?
Well, in making that statement, Labour have made it plain that they are a Brexit party. So even if they're offering a people's vote, their position is that they want a soft Brexit. And that's the problem, and that's why Labour aren't in Unite to Remain, because they are not the Remain party.
But I thought you said that the polls are showing that the new vote would actually be to Remain. So why not let them have it?
And that is... Boris Johnson went for a general election, not a referendum. We are where we are. If we end up with a referendum, the Liberal Democrats and Plaid Cymru and the Greens will all be fighting to Remain.
OK. Sal, thank you very much indeed. Sal Brinton there, President of the Liberal Democrats, who is part of this new Unite to Remain alliance, which is going to be represented in 60 different seats around the country in the election on December the 12th, which will mean that if you are a voter for the Green Party or the Lib Dems or possibly Plaid Cymru, you might not be able to vote for the party of your choice because that particular party might not be represented in your particular seat. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think that is what we should be doing at general elections. Do you? Let's talk to Harry, who's in Portsmouth. Hello, Harry.
Oh, yes, hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The southern good afternoon as opposed to the Scottish good afternoon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's raining up there. No great surprise, I'm afraid.
Oh, shame, yeah. You're asking for words. I think you've got a professional lexicographer coming on
later.
We
certainly have. Yes, we've got Susie Dent coming on.
Right, well, before I mention these words, I wonder what the dictionary definition is of the word respect, because my mind was blown by the usage that was made of that word.
Yes. Well, I think a lot of words during the whole Brexit process have been misused, haven't they? Like words like leave, words like remain, words like democracy, that kind of thing.
Words like referendum.
Yeah, there you go.
I looked that one up recently, and it's exactly what I thought it was, but it's not what the politicians think it means.
So what does it actually mean?
Well, it's a decisive vote by the populace. It's a general vote taken, as we know, direct democracy.
Yes.
And it's a decisive vote. It's given to us by politicians. That's what the definition is in my dictionary.
Yes. So it doesn't say, for example, that it's a confirmatory vote,
no,
or indeed possibly an advisory vote.
I only heard that 2 weeks after the referendum, they started using the word advisory, and apparently the politicians were told that it was the clerk's fault.
Oh, yeah.
When they were drafting the bill, they put the wrong they drafted it wrongly. That was the phony excuse that came out.
Oh, really? So they drafted what wrongly exactly?
The bill, they should never, the word advisory was never originally not supposed to be in there. And when it was queried,
yeah.
It was, I think it's Cameron, he blamed it on the clerks. Actually blamed it on those clerks.
Yeah. Well, maybe they just wanted to leave it in there so they have a get out clause in case it didn't go the way they planned.
Yeah, right. I've got some words here.
Okay.
There's klaxon, of course.
Klaxon, yes.
You're fond of.
I like the word klaxon. I like the sound of the klaxon as well. We haven't got a resignation klaxon on at the moment because obviously there's no government to resign from.
Yeah, I think you need to hijack a proper ship siren from down here in Pompey.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Blue passport.
Yes.
No deal better than a bad deal. I know these are phrases.
That's okay. We're allowing those.
Right. Yellow hammer.
Yes.
Operation Brock.
Yep.
No hard border.
Yep.
Purist, I thought I used it for, an early user of it, but I think other people had used it.
Mm.
I'm thinking of converting purist from purist to puritanical or even puritanical.
That's good.
You know, the way it's going.
Nobody's mentioned Brexiteer yet, I don't think.
Well, I thought somebody would have gone for that already.
Yeah, no, I don't think they have. We've got Ramona going in there, but I don't know if Brexiteer is actually there.
There's Lexiteer, which is a particular style of Brexiteer.
Yeah, which one is that? I've forgotten.
Well, that's a Labour style one.
Oh, that's
isn't
right.
It?
Okay, right. Lexiteer, yes.
And my own invention, which I mentioned to Christo some months back, Mucketeer.
Mucketeer.
The people who seek to muck up Brexit.
Jason Mucketeer used to play for Liverpool.
Oh, I didn't know it was a proper surname.
No, it's Mucketeer, actually. Sorry. This is being
stupid. Yeah, you're
now.
Right.
I'm just being an idiot now. I've gone full idiot on you.
Neverendum. I think that was a favourite of Julia Hartley Brewers.
Neverendum. That's a good one. Yeah, I like that. Prorogue. What about that?
Which one?
Prorogue.
Yeah, I've got that. That was going to be my next one. Meaningful vote.
Meaningful. Yes, like it.
I mean, you know, obviously that's what they call it. But normally, when I vote, I'm not worried whether it's meaningful or not. It's
well,
just a vote.
No, listen. When you vote, it's not meaningful. That's the whole point.
I've got another couple that made up myself.
Okay.
Referendum. That's where they want to bore us so much we never want another referendum.
Right.
Dreamerendum, because that's what we're expected to do.
Yeah.
Re-referendum,
right.
Because they're not happy with the first one.
Right.
And refresherendum, because they're still not happy and they think we've forgotten how to do it.
I love it. These are all great. Harry, these are great. Brilliant. Absolutely. I'm going to put all of these to the expert coming on, Susie Dent,
right.
Who's, of course, the lexicographer of Countdown. Well, there's nothing like talking about words, is there? Not just using them, but talking about using them and then talking about how we use them, because I love words. It's what I do for a living, basically. I used to write them a lot more than I do now. Now I just speak them, which is a lot easier than writing them in some ways, but I write them as well. I'm going to talk to Susie Dent now, lexicographer, of course, from Countdown's Dictionary Corner, the woman who perhaps is even more in love with words than I am. Susie, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
Now, we've been asking people to kind of send us their favourite words and phrases from this whole Brexit sort of madness that we've been going through for 3 years. And we've had some great ones. And I've got one here from a guy called Archie. He says, how about unbiased speaker? Because these are all phrases and words like prorogation that really, until this moment in time, we've never really used, have we?
No. Well, proroguing, it goes back to the 15th and 16th century. So you're right. It's kind of flown below the radar for half a millennium, really.
Is it permissible to use these words in different ways? Like, for example, if I'm going out for dinner with someone and I'm not enjoying it, can I prorogue the dinner and disappear?
Definitely can, because that's the way that English evolves. You know, in fact, you'll find that most of the words on, I think we're talking about the Commons Word of the Year today.
Yes.
Most of the words on their list are actually old words that have been repurposed in some way. They're not entirely new coinages. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. So, definitely you can use it in many ways. And who knows, it might get lots of 2019 entries outside of politics.
Yeah, and it is amazing how much this conversation has dominated our kind of culture in the last few, certainly this year, if not before, certainly this year. It's been practically the only thing that anybody talks about. You know, you get on a bus, you hear people talking about Brexit. Yeah. You go in the pub, you hear people arguing about it, you know. And it's not just those of us. I mean, I spoke to somebody the other day, and it was somebody that I wouldn't have thought was that interested in politics. And he was saying, you know, I watch the BBC Parliament channel now more than anything else.
I know. I think a lot of us do. Yeah, and that's, in some ways, I think that's a really good thing, obviously, that we are so immersed in the whole debate that we are much more aware of what's going on. But, you know, whether or not we're now too aware is a different matter, I suppose. But it's definitely reflected in language. And it would actually be quite hard to find a better snapshot of preoccupations, I think, than the words that are spiking in that particular year, you know, far more than pictures or photographs. So, yeah, they're really good indicators of where we are. The Brexican has been going strong for at least 2 or 3 years now.
Oh, yeah. And also there's a bit of word fascism going on at the moment as well, which I'd like to put to you, because I've had several conversations with lots of different MPs, and some of them, mostly Lib Dems, funnily enough, will say things like, oh, I wish you wouldn't use that kind of language. You know, they're kind of trying to make you use language which they want you to use rather than the words that you choose to use.
Yeah, I think in some ways politics has always been about sort of, you know, verbal sidestepping. It kind of, I suppose, by necessity has been that way, particularly when, you know, politicians are being interviewed, because it's a sort of brand exercise in many ways as well, and you're trying to steer it towards the language that you wish to express. But yeah, vocabulary is being policed, and in some ways, you know, that is a really good thing, obviously. And one of the words on the list this year is non-binary.
Yeah.
Big debate about pronouns, etc. The thing that always strikes me, though, is that, you know, we have these debates and we see them as being incredibly new. But in fact, the debate as to whether it should be he or she or they has been going on for, again, 400 years. And, you know, people, grammarians in the 19th century were really up in arms about the fact that people were beginning to use they for a single person. So then it was more about grammar. Now it's more about identity. But, you know, obviously we need to be careful with language very much. But you're right. There's much more awareness of its power. And certainly in politics, there was, you know, a phase of really violent, aggressive language, which wasn't particularly great either. And it's very easy to kind of pick that up and then transfer it to daily life. So, you know, I think that policing is a good thing, as long as you don't take it too far.
Yeah, I think so. But I suppose it's a question of, as well, who's making the rules, you know, because if it's people who are, you know, expert at twisting and sort of mangling words for their own devices, you know, which is what a lot of lawyers do. And we're also in this time now where we're having more and more decisions made by the law courts, by judges, by people who also can kind of almost redefine a word and tell you that it means something completely different to what you thought it meant.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the only solace I think we can take is that, you know, the word spin doctor, or the phrase spin doctor is very old, predates all of this. And likewise, the argument about sort of legal obfuscation and things. I mean, Dickens was writing about it, wasn't he? So, yes, but you're right, it can be troubling. And language is an enormously powerful weapon. And it does need to be sort of moderated and you know, used carefully. But I think the sort of most striking thing about the words of the year is that have been chosen in the last couple of years is that they're so serious. And, you know, this is, in some ways, they just make your heart feel a bit heavy, as opposed to ones that were chosen in previous years, which were, you know, just quite playful. Where we had selfies, we had photo bombing, we had simples. I think simples was the word of the year at one point. So, you know, that kind of exuberance has been lost a little bit. And we're now, you know, climate strike, the expression this year, I mean, almost inevitable given the fact that it spiked in the graphs on our databases so, you know, so highly and so dramatically.
Yes.
But it would be nice to see a return to some fun and to some wordplay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, funnily enough, I was reading the statement that was put out by the 11,000 scientists who have just made a kind of statement about the climate emergency. Yeah. They've actually admitted, which I think is interesting, that they've changed the phrase climate change to climate emergency because it actually sounds worse. And they've admitted that and said, well, we want people to pay more attention, so we're now calling it a climate emergency, even though, technically speaking, nothing's actually changed.
Yes, I've heard climate crisis as well as another sort of shift. I think it was somebody actually a while ago who was an advisor to President Bush in the US who was saying, don't call it global warming anymore because that's too scary.
Yeah.
Call it climate change, which sounds like you're just going from Pennsylvania to Arkansas or something. So, you know, you're right. The feelings we get are very much engendered by our choice of words, and that's why they matter so much to politicians.
Yes.
To people who are, you know, wanting to raise awareness.
Absolutely. A milkshake to have in a dictionary as rather than a noun to describe a drink is actually now described as to throw a milkshake or similar drink over public figure to humiliate them. So to milkshake somebody is now, I suppose, a verb.
It is, and people hate verbing, and they always blame American English for the verbing, like podiuming and meddling and things. I sound like a one-track record here, but Shakespeare was criticised for verbing, Keats was criticised for verbing, and we do it all the time. You know, so many of the verbs that we use were hated in their day as well. So, yes, that is just a really good example, again, of how English moves forward. Very rarely is it a brand new invented coinage, and far more often it's playing around with words, changing parts of speech, coming up with blends like bromance, famously,
right.
or other things like that. That is pretty much, those are the main mechanisms by which language moves forward at the moment.
And if you have a dictionary or you run a dictionary, and this is going to sound like perhaps a very stupid question, if you add more words in, do you have to take some out?
Nowadays, no, because obviously most are online. So you will find the most up-to-date dictionaries online rather than in print. So the print cycle is a lot slower than the online cycle.
Right.
So far fewer words are going out. And in the Oxford English Dictionary, which is what I consult every day, that's the sort of gone down the dictionaries, really, which takes you right back to the first meaning of a word. Back in whatever century it was, once a word goes in there, it never ever goes out. So that's a permanent record of the language,
right.
Which is why I love it.
And as far as your kind of words that go out of usage are concerned, do they tend to be based around something that we used to do that we don't do anymore? You know, like, I don't know, if you were describing riding in some kind of a ship that was, you know, not the kind of ship that we ride around in anymore. Is it? I mean, when do words kind of fall out of favour, I suppose?
Yes, old technology, yes, to some extent. The ones that fall out tend to be really obscure, and ones that, you know, because people always think it's going to be really exciting to get a list of what's gone away, but they tend not to be the most exciting ones. And in fact, old technology we really hold on to. So we still talk about dialing a phone or hanging up on someone, or some people might talk about changing the linen or whatever, when in fact we don't use those things at all anymore. We no longer have phones that we literally kind of put back on its hook. So we tend to linguistically hold on to these technologies even as they've completely moved on in a physical sense.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was listening to the radio this morning and somebody talked about Tom Watson throwing in the towel. And I thought, I haven't heard that for ages. You know, it's not something you hear very often anymore.
No, that's true, actually. I think boxers do still throw in the towel, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, so we still have loads of sporting metaphors going around. But I love the way that English sort of dips in and out of fashion, and sometimes they'll really surprise you. So I remember when one word of the year was inescapable, really, within, I think it was 2004, and it was chav, which just a horrible word, and exploded onto the scene in that year because of a website that was kind of criticising people. But, you know, that was over 150 years old. It was a Roman
right.
word. So I just find it fascinating how we have these ebbs and flows, and, you know, cool was first recorded in, I think, the end of the 19th century in English public schools, something was cool. And again, that re-emerged during the jazz era of the sort of 1940s and 50s in America. So it's just, for a lexicographer, it's just the most fascinating thing to watch.
Well, as the father of teenage children, it's also fascinating to see what they come up with whenever they're describing things. I go, what? And inevitably it's a word which we know, but they're using it in a really different way. You know, like sick. Or
exactly.
You know, or bad, or you know, it actually doesn't mean bad; it means good. You know,
exactly. Kids love to do that. They just sort of love to flip things to be subversive, and that's the way science always works. You know, let's take the word and make it mean something completely different, so authorities have got no idea what we're talking about.
Exactly right.
And it's the fastest moving area of language for that reason.
Now, if only there was a podcast that we could listen to that would have some kind of description of vocabulary. Do you think there is one?
Thank you for mentioning it. Yes, there is. Well, there's one that I do with Giles Brandreth.
Oh, great.
Something rhymes with purple, because something does rhyme with purple, which is the word herple, to walk with a limp. And it's just, we just have fun. And the reason I love mentioning it is I think it's the most me thing I've ever done, because I don't think I've ever been the most natural TV personality. And I like to float.
You haven't done too badly, though, have you?
No, I mean, it's the format of the show that it's just, a, you know, it's just a star on Countdown, really. But yes, it's just great. And we just have fun in my kitchen normally, and we just talk about things like this. You know, words that are bubbling under, words that are fading away, some of my favourite etymologies and that kind of thing.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Susie, for taking some time to talk to us. Susie Dent there from Countdown, but also host of the Something Rhymes with Purple podcast. If you like words, you'll like that.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.